Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm all right, apart from this croaky yes. voice. It'll get there in the end. Yeah, I don't know what causes it. Maybe I talk too much. Most people say I do.
Never.
Right. Let's have a look at what... I mean, it's been an interesting time. There's been storms, there's been rain, there's been cloud. Not a lot of looking in the sky to do, is there, really, with the weather as it's been. But hopefully... clearer, colder weather is on its way, which means that we can get back to looking at the sky.
Yes, I know. It's can be very, very frustrating. I mean, we had a partial eclipse of the moon recently and totally clouded out. Sometimes it feels like it's, you know, it's there to thwart you, isn't it, the weather? Whenever there's something really interesting to look up at in the night sky, yeah. In come the clouds and down comes the rain. But I think better times lie ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it's like we've had some meteor showers in the last few months and my wife goes out there late at night and looks up and she'll stand there for ages. Oh, look, there's one. There's another one over there, yes. And she literally point them out. By the time I look up, of course, they've gone. So I miss them. But apparently there are some more. Well, there's the Leonids coming, aren't they?
There is indeed, Tony. Yes, we have the Leonid meteor shower. So for any of your listeners who perhaps might not know what a meteor shower is, that's when you can expect to see an increased number of shooting stars. Shooting stars, also known as meteors. And this is where, you know, as Earth is travelling around the sun, there's lots of debris left out in our solar system, so in space surrounding us. Lots of dust-sized particles and bigger ones. And they're there all the time. And as the Earth is travelling around the sun, of course, those particles are smashing into the atmosphere. And as they hit the atmosphere, they vaporise really, really quickly. So you see that flash of light, and that's what we call a meteor or a shooting star, which of course are there every night. You can expect to see shooting stars every night, more after midnight. So at this time of year, though, and at other times, as you've mentioned, Tony, we have what we call meteor showers, and that is where Earth is passing through the legacy tail of a comet that has passed through the solar system. So comets are objects that come from the distant, far, icy reaches of the solar system and beyond. So they can come from a long, long way away, the cold parts of space. They are pulled by our sun's gravity, so they come towards the sun. As they come towards the sun, of course, they heat up. So you can see that beautiful tail behind them. That's where the gas and the dust is being vaporized by the heat of the sun. And they pass around the sun and they go back out into the solar system. So they sort of loop around the sun. Sometimes they don't actually make that journey. They're gobbled up by the sun and they are destroyed. But most of the time, these objects will keep looping around the sun and they leave a tail of debris behind them. And why we get the meteor shower is because at certain times of the year, predictable times of the year, our planet passes through that tail of debris left over from that comet. So there's a lot more mucky material to hit the atmosphere, so that gives us an increased number of shooting stars. And that is going to happen, well, the peak of this one will be on the night of the 17th of November. And the tail of the comet that Earth is passing through is called Comet 55P, which stands for...
Great name, I love that.
Temple Tuttle. And that has an orbital period of 33 years, so it takes 33 years to loop around the sun. But it's left that tail... and we're passing through it. It's that time of year, and it happens every November. It's that time of year when we're going to be passing through the tail. So through what's left over of that comet as it passes around the sun.
So we need.
It's a great time to go outside and look up. We just need some clear skies.
I was going to say, clear frosty nights is what we need, don't we?
We do. We do. Mm. Also, you need the moon to be out the way, because as much as we love looking at the moon, it's a real pain. If you want to see the stars or other objects.
Yeah.
But at this time, it's only going to be 21% lit, so a waxing crescent moon, low above the southern horizon at sunset, and it's going to be setting at about 7 o'clock in the evening. So it's going to be out of the way, so the night of the 17th, when it's due to peak, will be a really good time, because if we have clear skies, the stars should be lovely and dark.
Yeah.
And that's the best time to see the stars, the shooting stars.
Yeah, there's been some fabulous shots of the moon of recent times. It's been wonderfully clear at times to catch it. And one of the things I saw, and I think it was about a month ago that this happened, I saw a picture of the moon, and at the bottom left hand, around about 25 to, if you're looking at it as a clock face, I saw a very clear shot of Saturn and the rings of Saturn. And it was, you know, the moon was this huge white globe. And right, say, about 25 to, this very, almost like a full stop, was Saturn with the rings. And it was just a fabulous, fabulous photograph. And I'm guessing we're going to get something fairly similar with Venus, aren't we?
Yes, we are. But that just brings back memories, actually, Tony. A few years ago, I happened to be out in the field near the house. Mm. I just turned to look back due west, saw the moon. As you say, it looked beautiful. And just to the left, there was a butterscotch-coloured dot, literally on the limb, appearing to be on the limb of the moon. And I thought, gosh, you know, experience tells you that that looked like Saturn to me. And I remember grabbing my telescope, putting it out in the field, looking up, and I was able to see this gorgeous view, as you say, of the planet Saturn with its rings just emerging from the moon. So it had been occulted, eclipsed by the moon. And as you're quite right, Tony, that's going to happen this month as well, on the 9th of November, just before sunrise. So still quite dark, but the whole event will go through till about 11 o'clock in the morning. And the moon is going to pass over in front of the planet Venus. Now, if any of your listeners are out in the early morning hours at the moment anyway, you will know that Venus is looking gorgeous. It's been the brightest it's looked for and quite a while.
Yeah.
Unmissable, due east, look up, there it is. I mean, it's been absolutely stunning. So now, on the 9th of November, the moon's going to pass in front of Venus, so it will eclipse it. So Venus itself will disappear at precisely 9:43 in the morning.
Yeah.
The moon will pass in front of it, and Venus will reappear at 20:11 in the morning. Now, of course, it's going to be bright, but if you've been following it from before the sunrise, you'll know exactly where it is, and you'll know where to be looking when the moon passes over it. So that'll be quite stunning.
I'm going to say you're going to need something fairly powerful to see that in the daylight, aren't you?
You know, you can see it with binoculars, but a small telescope is better, without a doubt. But you can see Venus in daylight if you know where to look. You really can. Yeah.
That's,
and it looks beautiful.
That's kind of the trained eye, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Yeah. Is there anything...
You know, Tony, in the summer, summer, you know, I always, when we put the horses out early in the morning, daylight, and I always know sort of roughly where to look, but you don't have to strain to see it. Both Jupiter and Venus are still visible in daylight. You know, in those sort of, you know, 6-7 o'clock in the morning, they're still so bright that you can see them with the naked eye. Fantastic.
Yeah, and speaking of telescopes and looking up at the night sky, the James Webb telescope's been a bit busy, I believe.
Oh, isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
What a fantastic successor to the Hubble telescope, which is pretty amazing anyway. For those of you listeners who might not know, the Hubble telescope is the orbiting telescope that is in orbit around our planet and has given us these fabulous images over many, many years now. But the James Webb telescope has surpassed that now. And we are looking further back towards the Big Bang, towards the beginning of the universe. So we've been enabled to see all these stunning galaxies that were birthed, you know, right near something, you know, just a few hundred million years after the Big Bang. It's fantastic. And just recently, there was a beautiful image of the Crab Nebula that's been captured by the James Webb telescope. Oh my goodness. I mean, this was a supernova remnant that was first recorded by 11th century astronomers. It's something like 6,500 light years away, so quite a long way away. But the intensity of that image and the clarity is absolutely stunning. And the James Webb telescope is showing us all these objects that are out there that we've seen before, courtesy of Hubble, but are now, you know, we were looking at them in astonishing detail. So, I mean, the James Webb telescope looks at in the infrared, which is another part of the spectrum that enables us to look through dust, for example, and, you know, we can look at sort of the cooler objects that are out there in space, and it's bringing back these amazing pictures. It's stunning.
Yeah.
We're so lucky to be around now to see them.
Yeah, I mean, it's strange. I mean, it's just the strangest thing that comes into my head. You know what I'm like with these things. When you said we're looking back in time with these things, the James Webb telescope, looking back into the past almost. Towards the beginning of the Big Bang. The question that comes with it is a rather strange one. Is what would you see now that was up to date if you were looking, and how long would it take you to get those pictures?
Oh goodness. Well, I suppose thanks, Tony.
You're welcome.
I suppose the best example of that is our star, the sun.
Yeah.
Okay, we see it as we think it is right now, but of course, the reason why we see anything is because of the light, the energy, the radiation that any object is given off. And that applies to us as human beings. For example, if you were in the room with me now, Tony, I can see you and you can see me because your light, your radiation has left you and it's reached the back of my eye. Only it's done it in an incredibly fast period of time.
Yeah.
Because light will cover 186,000 miles in just 1 second. So it's travelling, and the reason why we see anything is because the light from that object has travelled and it's reached the back of our eyes. So the best example I can give is our star, our sun. Obviously, you can never look directly at the sun, but the sun is there. To us, to all intents and purposes to us, it's there right now, isn't it? It's current. But actually, it's not, because we are seeing the sun as it was 8 minutes ago, because it's taken 8 minutes for the light from the sun to reach the back of our eyes. So if the sun exploded right now, it would be 8 minutes before we knew that that had happened. I think that's the best example I can give.
Well,
there's really almost no such thing as immediacy, because everything in space is so far away. And the reason why we see it is because the light has traveled from that object.
I
hope that helps.
The sun is a nice easy one, because you can actually assimilate in your mind eight minutes, but when you're looking into the realms of the depths of time and our beginnings, you are talking a lot longer, which of course, and you're talking in terms of things that are almost incomprehensible.
Well, yes, and a really good example, Tony, is right now. So for any of your listeners who are looking up at the night sky at this time of year, it's a great time to see the most distant object that can be seen with the naked eye, and that is the Andromeda Galaxy. Very hard to explain exactly where that is over the radio waves. It's in the constellation of Pegasus, but you need to get a star map, easily done. Just look it up on Google. It'll show you precisely where to find it, and you'll find that square of Pegasus, and you'll be able to get it from there. But the point is, it looks like a tiny, tiny smudge. It's just about visible to the naked eye, but it is visible, and that is a galaxy that is much bigger than our galaxy. It's got over a trillion suns in it. But the point is, it's 2.5 million light years away from us. So that tiny smudge that you're seeing, so that light that's currently hitting the back of your eye and making that image, left that galaxy 2.5 million years ago. How's that for a little bit of perspective?
And it's still not something that you can quite grasp in your head. You can hear it, but you can't quite figure it. Certainly I can't anyway. And I just think it's a fascinating thing that what we're looking at is, it's not the present, it's history.
It is. And we're so small.
Yeah.
We're just so small. We're here for such a fraction of time. I mean, that's a really good perspective, isn't it?
Mm.
You know, our lives are just so incredibly short. They're unspeakably short, aren't they, compared to these objects that are out there, that have been out there for many millions, indeed billions of years.
Yeah, well, we talk about antiques in this country and things that are sort of 100 years old, 150 years old, which, I mean, they've only just about hit the beginning, I think, haven't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Finally, I think we better get to, I think it was, we were going to talk about Orion, I think, weren't we?
Yes, why not? Because it's that time of year now where I think one of the most impressive constellations, you know, patterns of stars, is visible. And that, of course, is Orion the Hunter. So he looks like a giant in the sky. And I know that, I'm sure your listeners know, easily recognisable by the three stars that form the belt. If you don't know what it is, go look it up. Just, you know, punch in Orion on Google, Orion, the constellation Orion, and it will show you the shape that you need to be looking at. And of course, get a pair of binoculars. I mean, it's stunning in itself, but if you get a pair of binoculars, you need to look just below the belt, and you will see, I mean, to the naked eye, you can see a smudge of light, but in binoculars, you'll see it's clearly a big cloud, and there are four big stars at the core of it, and that is the Great Orion Nebula, a stellar nursery. It's a cloud, and inside that cloud there are thousands of stars that have been born and are still being born, nestled inside that cloud. And the four big stars that form what we call the trapezium are easily visible in a pair of binoculars, and it's a stunning thing to see.
Yeah. Do you know, you're talking about that, the one thing that kind of put that into perspective for me, funny enough, was the film The Men in Black.
Oh, I haven't. Do you know, Tony, I haven't seen that.
Oh, you should, because there's a cat in there. And, of course, it's to do with monsters and things from outer space and all the rest of it. But the one thing was that attached to this cat's collar was the thing that the aliens needed. And it was in a little globe, and it was Orion's belt. Yeah. And it actually showed, it was brilliant, because it showed you Orion's belt in miniature. And you can see the stars, the clouds, the dust.
Oh, wow.
The whole thing. If you've not seen it, go see it.
I'm going to see that. I'm going to make a point of seeing that.
And on that note, Jane Green, I think my voice is about to give up.
Yes,
so
bless
you. I will say thank you for talking to us this morning. And we'll do one more, I think, if we can, before Christmas. And hopefully the voice will be a little better by then.
Oh, that's lovely, Tony. Thanks for having me. And I look forward to the next one before Christmas.
Thank you, Jane. Cheers.